Welcome to the Master of None podcast, adventures in a hands-on life. Build, grow, cook, train, explore. Today we're getting back into dog training. I would guess that most of you out there listening to this at some point have either had a dog in the past, or maybe you currently have a dog, or you're contemplating maybe getting a dog in the future. Now, anyone who's ever had a dog at some point has struggled with some aspect of dog training. So that's what we're talking about today, is dog training. Now, our first episode was more about bringing new puppies home. Talked a little bit about selecting the right dog for you and kind of some of those very basic things that you're going to try to do with your puppy or your adult dog, for that matter, if you've opted for adopting an adult dog. Now, with puppies in particular, like we talked about, there are two main things that if you can just handle two things, you're going to have a puppy that you really enjoy being around. And those two things are house training and puppy biting. So we talked specifically about those in that episode on puppy training. Today, we're advancing more into what we might call like basic obedience. Before we jump into that, though, as a reminder, this series that we're doing on dog training is brought to you in cooperation with Zach George's Dog Training Revolution. Now, Zach has two books. I have both of them. And these books really outline the training method that we've opted for our dogs. And the first book, Zach George's Dog Training Revolution, basically lays out the theory and practices and steps and a lot of specific techniques that you're going to use in your positive reinforcement training method. And I'm going to go ahead and recommend starting with this first one, the Dog Training Revolution. And let's say that you're thinking about getting a dog, you're planning on getting a dog, maybe you already have a dog and you just feel like you're kind of behind the curve on your dog training. Well, get this book as soon as you can, or at least settle on a training method and educate yourself on that training method. This is just the one that I like. So if you're already set on one, stick with it. If it's not working, maybe look at this, or if you haven't settled on one, this one right here from Zach George is going to be my recommendation. Now, what I would recommend doing if you're thinking about getting a dog in the future, learn your training method ahead of time before that dog comes home. And so like if you're, let's say you're working with this book, buy the book, read it all the way through once, then review it at least once before that dog even comes home with you. And then as you work through the dog's training process, work through each of these steps in the book again. Another thing that I really like about this book in particular is throughout the book, Zach has these little play button icons that tells you that he has an accompanying YouTube video. And even if you don't get the book, you can still access all of his YouTube content where he shows all of these methods and how he actually trains various dogs. Another thing that I like about Zach George's Dog Training Revolution method is that he doesn't make it out to be some mystical, magical process of dog training. No, he just breaks it down into very simple terms of here's what the dog's doing and here's why, and here's what we want the dog to do. So here's how we get the dog to do that. And just keeps it very simple. Like I said, there's no mystery to it at all. Now, the second book called Zach George's Guide to a Well-Behaved Dog, I tell people that this one, think of this as your troubleshooting guide. So it wouldn't hurt to go ahead and get the book and just read through it cover to cover. But really what he does here is breaks down chapter by chapter individual problem behaviors that we want to correct in our dog. Now, most of these behaviors, we also have to realize, are just natural dog behavior, and proper dog training is teaching the dog, no, I don't want you to behave the way that you would naturally behave. I want you to do this other thing instead that's not your natural behavior. So just to name a few, like barking, chewing, jumping, play biting, leash pulling, most of those are are just the result of the natural dog's behavior, and we want the dog to do something else. So he breaks it down chapter by chapter, each of those behavior problems, and many, many more, and how to deal with those specific behaviors. Next, before we actually talk about our dog obedience training methods, what we're doing, what we're working on right now, successes that we've had, challenges that we've had, just a quick update on Ajax and Aura, the two German Shepherd puppies that we brought home that we are training. Both of them are still in great health, so that's good news. Haven't had any injuries, no major injuries or anything like that. They're doing great, great personalities. They're showing themselves to be extremely intelligent, very alert, and just ready and willing to learn. So that makes training them just that much more fun. They are, however, growing a lot, which is kind of what puppies do. But that has actually been kind of one of our, you could call it a training challenge that we've had to deal with, is the size of these puppies. So at 4.5 months old, they are both right around or just over 50 pounds. And there are different charts that you can follow based on the breed and, you know, large breed versus small breed and particular breeds and how fast they grow. And you can kind of chart based on age of the puppy, how big it's going to end up being in the future, and different models for that. That puts them low end at around 90 pounds, high end around 140 pounds, full grown, most likely somewhere in the middle. Any way you cut it, those are going to be pretty large dogs, which is great once they're fully trained adult dogs that have calmed down a little bit. At this stage, that's a little bit of a challenge, though, because we're dealing with dogs that are already over 50 pounds, getting pretty strong, but are still just puppies. So they're just giant puppies. So they still have all of that puppy energy, the puppy clumsiness, but there's 50 pounds of that clumsiness flopping around, taking you out at the knees, running into the wall. So it's been a little bit of a challenge dealing with that, but nothing that we can't overcome. Okay, so we did mention the two main things for puppies being dealing with puppy biting and house training. So how are we doing on those two specific things? The puppy biting, we basically have that taken care of. They're not play biting with us anymore. You can pet them without feeling like you're trying to pet a piranha. House training, doing really well with that. In fact, most days we don't have any accidents at all, the vast majority of days. And on the rare occasion that we do have an accident, clearly my fault, not theirs. I would say that anyway, but clearly, like, they were telling me they needed to go out. They went and waited by the door. And for some reason, I decided that they could wait because I had something more important to do. Well, guess what? No, they can't. And so that's how that goes. Anyway, we did have a little bit of a setback with house training. We left for a spring break trip, so we had to put them at a boarding kennel for a little while, which they did fine with. It was actually great to socialize them with some other dogs and some other people that they hadn't met before, but that's not the place where they're going to get that reinforcement on house training, where it is and isn't okay to relieve themselves. So they have a nice big kennel, so they're naturally just going to go in one corner and not worry about it. So just be aware of that. If you get a puppy and you're working on that house training, if possible, and I realize this is not always possible, but if possible, try to schedule it so that you're actually there for the entire first several months. So you're not having to kennel them for any time in that first few months, because you will have some training setbacks, especially on that house training. So I would say, though, that within 3 or 4 days of getting back, we were right back on track with the house training and really didn't see any other setbacks, actually a lot less setback than I expected in most of their other training. They jumped right back into it. They remembered all of the commands that they were learning before and also remembered us when we got back. You leave a new puppy, you kind of wonder, you're like, oh, well, is he going to remember me when I get back? Because if I'm gone for a week, that's like a pretty big chunk of his life. But of course, they remembered us when we got back and they were super excited to see us. Got lots of puppy kisses and licks all over my face when I went to pick him up from the kennel. So that was fun. So what's next? Okay, I think what I want to do here before we talk about the specific commands that we're using in this obedience training phase, and maybe I should kind of define that for you. I'm going to define basic obedience training as the basic commands or skills, whatever you want to call them, that your dog needs to know in order to be an enjoyable adult dog to be around. Just kind of a basic family dog, companion dog, not trained to do any specific job or skill or anything. It's not trained for law enforcement work or as a guide dog or as a search and rescue dog or a herding dog or a tracking dog or a dog that's going to compete in like agility or competitive obedience skills or anything like that. Just a family dog. So these are the skills that are required to have a really good dog that's just that family dog. But before we get into those specific commands and skills, I kind of want to reiterate some of the concepts of this positive reinforcement training method. So there are a handful of things that I kind of brainstormed and wrote down that I think are either things that are important for you as the trainer to understand as you approach this training method, or things that kind of distinguish this training method from other methods. So let's talk about those real quick. So let's start with us as the trainer. Well, one of the things that's really important to understand as the trainer is that dogs do not naturally generalize a concept. You can teach them a concept, but it's very specific at that point, and it takes repetition in many different environments, many different circumstances for them to begin to generalize that concept. One example of that would be something like teaching the command sit, which is usually one of the first things that people want to teach their dog is how to sit. Great. Okay, so we're going to teach sit. So we go for a walk, we get the dog some exercise, and that's another pointer there is if your dog's having trouble focusing on a training session, you probably need to give the dog some exercise. Go for a walk, play fetch, play tug. We're going to talk about the value of tug and fetch also and how they tie together. Anyway, get the dog some exercise, then come back to that training session and give it another try. Because if the dog needs to go relieve themselves, the dog is hungry, the dog is thirsty, or the dog has too much energy and they need to burn off some of that energy, they're not going to be focused on you and they're not going to be focused on your training session. Anyway, what I was saying, dogs don't generalize concepts naturally. So back to that scenario of teaching sit. So we go for our walk, we come back in, and maybe we have our treats in the kitchen. So we grab a handful of treats and we're going to work on sit. So the dog's doing really great with the sit command. And then I change like one thing, like I sit down in a chair and I tell the dog to sit. Maybe I was standing before, or maybe I was crouched down, so I was kind of in the dog's training bubble. We'll talk about that concept also. So maybe I was crouched down fairly close to the dog, and the dog's doing really well with sit, and then I sit in a chair, and I tell the dog to sit. And the dog looks at me like, yeah, I don't get it. Well, that's not because your dog is stupid. That's because the dog doesn't automatically generalize that concept of the sit command, and you've changed a variable. You were crouched down before, and now you're sitting in a chair. Or you stand up, or take a few steps back from the dog, or turn your back and give the dog a command where you're pointed the other direction. Or maybe you're in the living room instead of in the kitchen. Well, those are all variables in the dog's mind that completely change the scenario. To us, that's easy. Well, I said sit, so why aren't you sitting? But in the dog's mind, that's just not how it works. So in order to get the dog to generalize the concept of the sit command, we have to do that in all of those different scenarios until we've done it in enough different scenarios that the dog does generalize that sit command, so that no matter where we are, no matter what our body posture is or how far we are from the dog or what direction we're pointed or what we're wearing, we can say sit and the dog will sit. But it's important to realize that all of those things are variables that could throw your dog off. Even something as simple as wearing a hat or not wearing a hat, wearing sunglasses. Well, I understood you just fine when you weren't wearing sunglasses, but now I have no idea what sit or come or stay or down or any of that means now that you have sunglasses on. Okay, so the next thing to talk about is that training bubble that we mentioned a minute ago. But the idea here is that the dog has a training bubble that starts small and gradually gets bigger. So early on, that may actually mean that you're crouched down to get down kind of at the dog's height, basically face to face with the dog to get the dog to engage with you, look at you, communicate that command, and then have the dog perform whatever you've asked them to perform. Now, as time goes on, you can gradually increase the size of that training bubble from being like right in the dog's face to being back just a little bit to being maybe standing and a few steps back. And this is a very slow process. And if you get outside that training bubble and the dog stops listening to you, what you need to do is realize that that's not the dog being, quote, disobedient and thinking, oh, I can get away with this now because you're so far away. It's just that you're outside the dog's training bubble. So you've changed the scenario enough that you've just changed things on the dog and you're presenting them with a completely different scenario. So get back inside that training bubble and then slowly stretch the bounds of that bubble. And this is how you eventually work out to a dog, especially if you're talking about any sort of field work dog or herding dog or anything like that, that's going to listen to you from hundreds of yards away. Well, you've gradually increased the size of that training bubble from being right down on the dog's level, face to face, maybe a foot or two away, to maybe a quarter of a mile away. The next thing that I wanted to talk about is the importance of timing. Now, you hear about this all the time, but what does it actually mean? Because every training method, whether it's training dogs or horses or dolphins, everyone always talks about the importance of timing in your communication with the animals that you're training. So, like I said, what does that actually mean? Maybe the better way to look at it is realizing that a dog's kind of training timing window is very narrow. So here's an example. Let's say that your dog decides to, I don't know, you're folding laundry and the dog decides to steal a towel off the couch where you're folding laundry and run off with it because it thinks that's going to be fun, obviously. Now, you don't want the dog doing that, right? So let's say that you have established something like the word no, meaning no. So that's the word you use when the dog's doing something that you don't want them to do. So we're going to have other marker words that affirm good behavior, and then other words that let the dog know that, no, that's not what I want you to do. So when it comes to timing, when would you actually use your no? Or a lot of people like to use something a little softer because we're not like verbally disciplining the dog. We're just letting the dog know that, no, what you're doing right now is not the behavior I'm looking for. I need to do something different. So when would you use that? Some people just say, uh-uh, or something like that. And usually that's enough to get the dog's attention if you're consistently engaging with your dog to train them on what you want them to do. So what I would say is when you see the dog looking at the towel, that's when you need to use a command like leave it, which is an important command to train. Both for your convenience and for the dog's safety, for that matter, to be able to have a very consistent leave it command is very important. So when you see the dog look at that towel, and if you know your dog, you can read their body language, and you know, okay, he's going to go for that towel and grab it and run off and try to use it to play tug with me. So from a timing perspective, and I should also mention too, that's important to realize that your dog's motive here is actually generally going to be something like that, like to have a game of tug with you because your dog wants to engage with you, wants to play and have fun. So your dog's intention is not to frustrate you, it's to have fun. So back to the timing though, you see your dog look at that towel as though he's thinking about grabbing it and you give him the leave it command. Now hopefully He listens and turns away and finds something else to do. Now, let's say that you're really on top of it. What you're going to do now is actually position yourself where you haven't totally blocked the dog from getting that towel. It's still an option for him. But what you have done is you've positioned yourself where you would be able to keep the dog from getting the towel once you see what decision he's going to make. So, important thing here, if he does obey that leave it command, you need to reaffirm that as being good behavior, because that is the behavior you want. So whatever marker word you're using, if that's yes or good or whatever you've chosen as your marker word, I've found yes to be pretty much the easiest marker word to remember and use consistently, and the dogs just respond to it really well. So as soon as he makes that decision to leave it, even though you're maybe a little upset that he was thinking about doing something he wasn't supposed to do, as soon as you say leave it and he leaves it, you reaffirm that with a good yes and praise the dog for doing what you told him to do. Now, the other alternative is that he decides to go ahead and go for it, even though you've told him to leave it. Well, now is when you step in, because you have that timing. You've nailed that timing, right? So you've repositioned yourself where you're close enough to intervene to keep him from getting it if he decides to go for it. Well, that's when you would do that, move your hand or whatever to actually keep him from getting the towel, and use your whatever your negative indicator is, that uh-uh, or no, or I've even known some people to use no sir and no ma'am with their dogs consistently, which I kind of like, because it's just a reminder. It may sound silly, but it's just a reminder to treat our pets with respect. So let's continue through this scenario. And the word that I usually use is something like, uh-uh, just like that. And the dogs know that that means that whatever they're doing is not what I want them to be doing. So he decides to go for the towel, or in my case, it's actually more likely that she goes for the towel, because Ajax is actually doing a little better with leaving the laundry alone. Anyway, so the dog goes for the towel, you put your hand there, create a situation where they can't get it, and say that until they decide to leave it, and then you give them that positive reinforcement that yes, as soon as they do that behavior, even if they started with the behavior that you didn't want, as soon as they change and deliver that behavior that you are looking for, you also immediately change and deliver that yes. And that's what I'm talking about with the good timing. Now let's play the scenario out a little further. Let's say that you didn't get there in time. The dog does grab the towel. You're saying, no, leave it, drop it, whatever it is that you're saying. And the dog's starting to run off, starting to act all playful because they're excited because you're going to come chase them. And let's say that you do catch them, you get the towel in your hand, and then let's say that they go ahead and drop it and give it to you. And most people's reaction here is exactly what you shouldn't do. Most people are going to throw the towel back on the couch and say, no, leave it, or something like that. Well, what the dog has actually done there is the behavior that you wanted, because they gave it to you. So don't tell them that that's not what you wanted them to do. So even though you're frustrated with the fact that your dog grabbed the laundry off the couch and was running off, and then you had to catch the dog and take it away from him, don't reaffirm the one good thing that they did, which was giving it back to you instead of pulling harder and clamping down on it. Once they do what you're telling them to do, you have to immediately switch from saying that no or uh-uh to that positive yes, or whatever your positive marker words are. And that's really all that I mean by the importance of timing. So you can see how precise your timing really has to be. Your timing is based on what the dog is actually doing at the moment, not on how you feel about the last 30 seconds of your dog's behavior. Now, when it comes to timing, there is a tool you can use that will, I'm not going to say it's going to help you, but a tool that allows you to be even more precise in your timing of that positive affirmation. And that's a clicker. Now, a lot of people have heard of clicker training, and there's kind of a misunderstanding that it's like some super cutting edge magical dog training method, and it's really not. All that clicker training is, when done properly, is positive reinforcement training and just using the click from the clicker as the positive reinforcement marker. So literally all we're doing is we're replacing the word yes with, and that's it. There are a couple distinct advantages to the clicker though. One is maybe you're just going to get tired of saying yes and you just want to be able to do a simple click with a little thumb clicker. Really easy to do, especially if we're talking like a longer extended training session. You're like, I don't want to say yes another 100 times. So I can just click instead. Now, another advantage is it's very consistent. So the sound of that click is not dependent on the subtleties of your mood. Because believe me, the dog will pick up on it. If you have an excited yes, maybe that's what the dog's used to when it is really enthusiastic, or you're enthusiastic about the training, maybe you're sleepy and you give the dog a yes, or maybe you're frustrated, yes. Well, those don't mean the same thing to your dog. So eliminating that emotion from the equation and just replacing it with a simple click that's going to be exactly the same every time, regardless of your mood, does have its advantages. The other thing is the click doesn't take as long. It's literally shorter than saying that positive marker word. So what that allows you to do is more precisely mark for the dog the exact moment when their behavior complied with what you wanted them to do. And this does two things. The first thing that it does is it just allows the dog to kind of figure it out faster because you're being more precise in communicating to the dog that that was good behavior. The other thing that it does is it allows you to train kind of like more specific, more refined behaviors. And maybe for just a family companion dog, you don't get to this level, but if you were doing some sort of like competitive show type obedience training, and I don't know, you want your dog to stand, you know, go from a sit to a stand, but you want them to do it, or from a laying down position all the way into a stand, but you want them to pause at certain times, or to be able to freeze in a very precise position, having that clicker to communicate to the dog exactly when they've done what you told them to do just makes it easier on you and easier on the dog. But like I said, I should reiterate, there's nothing magical about clicker training. It is simply this positive reinforcement training method with the use of a clicker as that positive reinforcement marker. Now, how do you actually get the dog to make that association? It's super easy. Basically, usually it takes one, maybe two training sessions with the dog where you're creating that positive association with the clicker. Now, if you have a jumpy dog, or I would actually say if you have any dog, you don't want to make them clicker shy. Some dogs just have a tendency, if you surprise them with something for the first time, then they're never quite the same with that thing. And you've just, you know, if you get right in the dog's face and pull the clicker out and click it right near their face and it kind of startles them, well, you've just created a negative association with the clicker, and it's going to take a lot of work to overcome that one negative association to build that extremely positive association that you need with the clicker. So what do? I would recommend when you first expose them to the clicker, hide it behind your back, and like so that the sound is a little muffled, or maybe you're wearing a hoodie and you can put it in the pocket of your hoodie so the sound is muffled, and stand back quite a ways, maybe even in a different room, and go ahead and give it a click so it's a little muffled, a little further away from the dog so it doesn't startle them. Just start exposing them to that noise. And then if you can see that your dog's comfortable with the noise, get closer and closer until you are basically face-to-face engaging with the dog with the clicker in your hand, and you're able to click it and the dog doesn't freak out. Okay, as long as you can do that, the next thing to do is to get a big handful of treats, and it doesn't take a big treat. You can do treats in tiny, tiny little doses, so you can give the dog a lot of them. And I'm talking maybe like 20 or 30 or more pieces that you're going to do in this training session. All you're going to do is click, treat, click, treat, click, treat. You're not actually going to say click to the dog, otherwise the dog's going to associate you saying click with the treat. Don't say the word treat either. Click the clicker and then hand the dog a treat. So it's going to sound more like this. And that's it. And after each click, and it doesn't have to be like right away, but if you can give the dog a treat within 1 to 3 seconds after each click, they're going to make that positive association with the clicker. So 1 or 2 training sessions like that. Next thing that you're going to do is actually use the clicker for some of the commands. Ideally, a command that the dog already knows, something like sit. So you would say the word sit, and as soon as the dog goes into a sit, at that exact moment when the dog has done what you told him to do, you're just going to click. And you can also give them a treat at that point. In fact, on this first training session with the clicker, I would highly recommend augmenting the click with a treat so that they continue to build that positive association with the clicker. Now, eventually you are going to phase the treats out either entirely or mostly from your training sessions, but there's really no reason to rush that. You don't need to be worried about, oh, my dog is getting spoiled, he's getting too many treats. No, you're really just saving you and the dog a whole lot of headache and making the training a lot easier on both of you by using treats generously at first, and then scale it back a little, but very generously at first. It's just easier on everybody. The next thing that I wanted to talk about that really makes this training method unique is in the initial stages of training a new command or a new skill, tell yourself in your head, behavior, then command. What we might call traditional training goes command and then behavior. I tell the dog to sit and then the dog sits. Or I tell the dog to sit and it doesn't, so then I make it sit. Well, throw that out the window because that's way too much work for you and the dog. And this is especially true if you're working with bigger dogs that you may or may not actually be able to physically force them to do what you want them to do. Even our 4.5-month-old puppies are getting to the point where if I had to, I'm probably the only person in the family who could physically force the dog to do something. And I don't even want to. I definitely don't want to. And it wouldn't be pleasant for me or the dog. It'd be a bit of a fight if the dog wanted to do something and I wanted them to do something else. So maybe you can get away with this with smaller dogs, but even with smaller dogs, it's going to be much more pleasant if you can avoid having to physically force your dog to do something. In fact, that's one of the things I really like about this training method in general is, you know, aside from the, you know, affectionate touch, all the petting and stuff that's an important part of communicating with your dog and having a dog, aside from that, the actual training does not have to involve any physical contact with the dog at all. So back to behavior then command. So what does that mean? Well, we are going to create a situation for each of these skills and commands that we're teaching. We're going to create a situation where the dog decides to do whatever it is that we want them to do. Let's go back to the sit example. We want to train sit for the first time. Well, how do we do that? We create a situation where the dog sits and then we tell them sit. And then we tell them that it was good. And we use our treats and our clicker and our yes reinforcement. But we didn't tell them to sit and then make them sit. We waited until they sat on their own. And this helps with the timing too. Because as soon as the dog sits, you have the opportunity right then to associate the word sit with that action. So how do we actually do that? How do we actually create those situations? Well, some of the more advanced skills and training, there are going to be other methods that we use. But for the basic stuff, most of the time we're using the lure method. Now, what is the lure method? It's pretty simple. Basically, it means that I have a treat in my hand, and I make sure that the dog knows that I have a treat in my hand, and then I use the position of that treat to lure the dog's attention, which is mostly focused in its nose and eyes, to where I physically want its nose and eyes to be, and the rest of the dog kind of follows the nose. So let me give you some examples. And let's actually not start with sit, because I would recommend when you start this actual command training, this basic obedience training, don't start with sit. The command that I would recommend that you start with It's actually a command that we're going to call look at me. Now you can call this whatever you want, but I do recommend training this action first. And you could actually call any of these commands whatever you want. You can use whatever word. We just kind of used standard dog command words, but if you wanted to use some other word for some reason, you absolutely can. If you want to train your dog in any language that you want, you absolutely can. In fact, you can start with one language. Let's say that you train your dog in English first, and then you want to train your dog in German or Russian or Spanish or French. That's really easy to do once they have all of these basic skills down. We'll talk about that later. The important thing here is that you decide on words that you can and will use consistently. So don't think you're doing something cute by teaching the dog up when you say down and down when you say up, and then you end up getting confused and it confuses the dog and frustrates your guests. I would not recommend doing something like that, but whatever word you want to use, you absolutely can. So we're going to start this one, and I'm just going to say, look at me is the command. Now, how do we do that? Well, again, behavior first and then command, and we're going to use the lure to get the dog to do what? To look at us. I'm not talking about looking at my hand. I'm talking about eye contact. And there's something about us, definitely human to human, but human to other mammal also, that when you make that direct eye contact, like you can feel it. Like there's some connection there. And if you're looking at me directly in my eye, that feels very different than if you're looking at a spot that's half an inch away from my eye. And you can tell. And you can tell when another human or an animal locks onto your eyes and you actually make that eye contact. Now, word of caution, be careful doing this with a dog, especially an adult dog that you don't know. I would not recommend getting right down in their face and trying to make direct eye contact, because that could be interpreted as aggression. But if you have a dog that you know and trust, and or a puppy that you're training right from the start with basically a clean slate, highly recommend starting with this look at me command. And maybe you do the look at me with an adult dog also. Maybe you get a dog from the shelter and you're starting to work on training. Maybe you do the look at me, but you do it from a little safer distance, maybe standing in a couple steps back. Anyway, I'm going to use that lure method. So I'm going to have that treat in my hand, and I'm going to make sure that the dog knows that I have that treat in my hand, even hold it initially like between my thumb and forefinger where maybe they can actually see it too. And then I'm going to bring it, their attention's probably going to be on that treat. I'm going to bring it up like basically to my nose between my eyes. You bring it up there and you're actually going to see, they're going to follow that treat up. And then most dogs, once you have it very close to your eyes, their attention's actually going to snap, even maybe just for a moment. Their attention is going to snap from the treat to your eyes. And you, if you're paying attention, you can see and you can feel when you have that eye contact. And the moment that they make that eye contact, you're going to give them that positive affirmation, that yes, and then give them the treat right away too. Now, from there, we're going to slowly progress with small steps. We're always going to take small steps so we don't totally confuse our dog, frustrate the dog, frustrate ourselves. Small steps to get from there where I actually bring the treat up between my eyes, wait for the dog to make eye contact, and then say yes and give him the treat, and or click too if you're already incorporating the clicker training. But at this point, you really don't have to on this initial training. Wait until they have a few skills down and then bring that clicker in, because it's actually easier to reinforce what the clicker means after they have a couple of these commands down. Anyway, we're going to progress from that level of look at me to where maybe they know that I have a treat in my hand and I don't bring it all the way up to my face, but I say, look at me, and they're able to make that eye contact. I immediately, as soon as they break their attention from whatever their attention was on to my eyes, that's when I give them that positive affirmation, that marker word, that yes, and then give them the treat. And then eventually we're going to get to the point where I don't even have to have a treat, and we're actually definitely at this point with both Ajax and Aura now, I don't even have to have a treat. They don't even have to think that I have a treat. And I can say, look at me, and their attention immediately, whatever they were doing before, their attention immediately snaps to my eyes. No, we're training look at me first because we're actually going to use look at me in a lot of these other commands while we're training and practicing those other commands. Here's how that might play out. So actually yesterday we were out on a walk, me and both dogs, off leash because we're working on off leash walking also, and politely walking off leash and politely walking on leash reliably in different circumstances are two almost completely different skills for the dog. So anyway, we're going on a walk off leash and an antelope shows up that I actually hadn't seen. It was like bedded down and it stood up and it was only maybe, 30 or 40 yards away. So this is actually the closest that they have ever been to an antelope. So of course they're very interested, wondering, oh, is this another dog? Can we play with it? Do we eat it? Do we chase it? Or is it something that we need to be scared of? So they see it and they immediately start walking toward it. Kind of cautiously, but walking toward it. Now, I want to train them to reliably walk with me on or off leash and to ignore the distraction of other animals, whether that's other dogs, other pets, livestock, wildlife, whatever it is. I want them to basically acknowledge and ignore on most other animals. Now, kind of as a side note, a lot of quote, bad dog behaviors are the result of distraction that just builds and builds and builds until it's totally out of hand. So treating that antelope as a distraction, I let them get a good look at it, okay? And then I tell them to leave it. Now they hear me say leave it, but they really want to still check it out. So they kind of stop walking and then they start taking a few more steps toward it, still like totally focused on the antelope. I'm giving them a few, leave it, leave it. And I can see that this could go either way. They could decide to leave it, or they might decide to continue walking over to it, or they might decide to try to chase it. Now, there are several reasons I don't want that to happen. Like chasing animals is, or anything, cars or anything, plastic bags blowing out into the street. I want to build that habit of not chasing things that you want to chase. So it's dangerous for the dog, for one. It's bad for the wildlife to be chased around by domestic dogs. I don't want to do that. And here it's actually illegal and there's a pretty stiff fine for allowing your dogs to chase wildlife. So for all of those reasons, I want to train them to be off leash and reliably not chase the wildlife. So back to our scenario, I'm giving them this, leave it, leave it. And they're not quite responding. They're not just turning around and coming right back to me. So I think I need to do something different to get their attention on me. So I give them a Ajax or a look at me. And both of their heads snap around. They look right at me, right in my eyes. And I say, leave it. And they come right back to me because I was able, that was a distraction. That antelope was a distraction. And even though they know what leave it means, the distraction was starting to outweigh their desire to do what I was telling them to do, but just being able to get their attention back on me and then tell them to leave it gave that leave it command so much more weight that then they're like, oh, okay, we're going to leave it. And we continued on our walk. And there are just all sorts of applications for the look at me command, including like when you get to the point of training your dog not to bolt through your open front door. Because there's a whole process that you're going to go through on exposing them to the door being a little bit open and then all the way open. And really what they're doing is they're being distracted by something that's outside or even just the idea of outside. And if you can redirect their attention to you, so as you're opening that door and they're looking to see what's out there, if you give them a look at me and they look at you while the door is opening, you know, you have your dog at that point. And you're having that positive, productive training when their attention is on you, not on whatever it is that's distracting them. Okay, so now that we've kind of established that look at me, because like I said, let's start with that. Train that first and then progress to some of these others. Let's run through real quick some of what people usually would just call the basic dog commands and kind of how you use the positive reinforcement and lure method on each of those. So next, probably the most basic is sit. Now, This one's really easy. All we're going to do to lure the dog into that sit position is to put the treat in front of its nose and then lift it up and back. So basically move from just above its nose toward a point that's like between its ears. Don't lift it straight up because that's not going to work. Lift it up and back toward its ears, and the dog's going to lift its head, and that's going to cause its hindquarters to drop, and the dog's just going to drop right into a perfect sit. And then at that point, that's where you say, sit, yes, click, treat, all of that stuff. And that's how you teach your dog what sit means. Rather than saying sit and then forcing them to do it, get them to do it and then tell them what they did. And you'll eventually progress to the point where they're actually going to anticipate what they think you're going to tell them to do, because they might be like so into the training because treats are fun, right? Where they're going to build a habit of just coming up to you and sitting, which is not a bad habit to have. In fact, recently we had some guests, and I was so proud of the puppies for not embarrassing me in front of guests. They actually showed that at this point in their training, their default when they walk up to somebody is to sit. And then on top of that, if they don't immediately get pet and all of that that they're looking for, they lay down, which is even better. So instead of jumping and barking and running around and all of that nonsense, they walk up to a new person, sit, wait a few seconds, and then lie down. Anyway, that's how you teach a basic sit. Now from there, let's do down next. Now this is also important. I talked about the importance of being consistent in your command words and choosing words that you can and will be consistent with. So if you want the dog to sit, you say sit. You do not say sit down, because down is a different command. If you want the dog to perform down, you say down. If you want the dog to say get off of the couch, you say off, not get down, because down is a different command. Now, dogs are extremely smart. Don't get me wrong. They're extremely smart, but they do not speak your language. You are training your dog certain commands. You're not teaching them your language. So that's why we just have to be really consistent with the commands that we use. Now, over time, once they have a good handle on these, you can intentionally introduce other ways of saying these same commands. For example, sit could become take a seat. I don't know. Maybe you teach your dog, pull up a chair, take a knee, circle up, whatever it is. I don't know. And that's, I mentioned teaching your dog commands in other languages also. That's also how you do that. The easiest way to do it is also associating some sort of physical hand signal with each command, such as sit. And then we want to teach the dog Russian. Well, I've taught sit with a downward blade hand motion. And all I have to do is create the exact same scenario, but I'm just going to replace the word sit with sidet. And the dog learns that that means sit in Russian. Actually, the dog doesn't learn that it means anything in Russian, because the dog doesn't even know that Russian is a thing. The dog learns that that word as a command also means execute this sit behavior. All right, so let's continue progressing through some of these commands. So we did sit. Let's do down next. Now, down is the command that I like to use to put the dog in a position where it has its belly on the floor and it's laying with its front paws in front and its back legs just kind of tucked up underneath. So it's still in a relatively alert position, but laying down. So it's not flopped over on its side. It's just laying down. Now the way we do that, the easiest way, put the dog in a sit first, then put the treat in front of its nose, and then pull the treat down directly toward the floor. Now the dog's nose is going to drop, and to follow that treat, nose and attention are dropping. If you get all the way down to the floor and the dog still hasn't gone into a down, then start to pull the treat away from the dog toward you along the floor, slowly enough to keep the dog's attention on the treat. And that's just going to lure and coax the dog into that down position. And then as soon as they commit to that down position, that's when you give them that, yes, down, click, treat, all of that. Next, we're going to do up. Now this is from a down to get back into a sit position. We're going to use the command up because the actual physical motion of going from standing into a sit is so different than going from laying down into a sit that I don't want to use the word sit again to get the dog into that position. So if the dog's already down and I want the dog to go into an upright sit position, I'm going to use the command up. This is really easy to do from the down. We're going to do exactly the same thing. Put the treat in front of the dog's nose and up and back over its ears, lifting it straight up so that its nose follows it, and the dog's going to go into a sit. From there, we can teach stand. And I should reaffirm, at each of these stages, this is not a one-time lesson. At each of these stages, you're rewarding the dog with your positive markers, with the treat, with the click, and also repeating the actual command clearly so that the dog makes that association between that word and that action. Okay, so we got up. Next is stand. So from a sit position, this is where we want the dog to go into a position where it's actually standing upright on all four legs. So all we do here is from a sit position, we're going to put the treat at basically at eye and nose level, and then pull it horizontally away from the dog. The dog's going to extend its neck to follow the treat with its nose, and then do this slowly enough that the dog can actually follow. If you yank it away, the dog might interpret that as you taking it away. So just slowly pull it horizontally away from the dog's nose so that they follow it, and at some point, in order to continue following it, they're going to have to stand out of that sit position into a stand. At that point, again, same thing. The yes, click, give them the treat, repeat stand, all of that. The next one's a little different. Now, this is a wait command. Now, I don't want my wait command to be confused with my stay command because there's a subtle difference between the two. So let's talk about what I'm looking for with the dog's behavior when it comes to a wait versus a stay. Now, maybe the best way to explain this is at the end of a wait, they're waiting for something that they want. And at the end of the wait, they're going to get that thing. A stay is simply a stay. So whether I have the dog in a sit or a stand or a down, and usually for teaching young dogs, it's easiest to stay actually in a down. So wait until you at least have sit and down until you attempt to teach stay. Because psychologically, if they're already laying down or already sitting, they're just in a more patient posture and they're going to be more likely to pay attention to that stay. So stay, whatever position I have them in, if I say stay, I want the dog to stay there until I call the dog to me. So a stay is going to end with a come, and there are different ways to do this, but a stay is going to end with a come. The dog is going to come to me to break that stay command. Now, a wait, on the other hand, I don't really care what physical posture the dog is in, and the dog may actually put itself in a different physical posture just to be more patient. They tend to do that. Like if they know they're supposed to be waiting, they'll oftentimes just go ahead and put themselves in a sit because that psychologically for the dog is just a more patient posture. And you'll see your dog do that. So the wait is going to end with an okay. And that tells them that they can come out of the wait and basically get whatever it was that they were waiting for. So this is also not a leave it. Now a leave it could be a leave it permanently, like an antelope or a bear. That's a permanent leave it. You're not going to get to mess with it. Or it could be a temporary leave it, like with a treat, that you're going to leave it right now until I pick it up and give it to you, and then you can have it. Anyway, so wait is not stay, wait is not leave it. Wait is also one of the first commands that I'm going to try to get the dog to generalize to a whole lot of different situations because it's a really useful one. Now, where I actually started training wait is on letting them out of their kennels. So they have their kennels, that's their space, it's where they sleep overnight, it's where they are when they're not fully supervised. So that's their space, but when I let them out of their kennels, they're usually really excited to go do whatever it is that we're doing next, whether that's going for a walk, playing some games, doing some training sessions, or just hanging out with me, whatever it is, they're excited to get out of their kennel. Now, funny thing, I've also trained a go to bed command, which is, even at this point, is almost always followed up with a treat. So they're also always really excited to go in their kennel. So anyway, after some time in their kennel, if I'm going to let them out, they're really excited about it. So a dog's natural reaction is going to be to get all wound up and probably jump against the door of their kennel, put their paws on it, spin around in circles, all of that. But I want them to wait. I don't want them to jump on the door of their kennel. I want them to just back off and be patient. So how do we train that? Well, we don't set the bar real high at first. So when I started training this, all I did was open the latches on the kennel and then just gently hold the door closed in that closed position with my hand while the dog's getting all wound up, maybe jumping against the door, maybe spinning around, getting all excited. And I'm just calmly saying, wait, wait, wait. And it's okay to repeat commands at a certain interval. And that kind of goes back to that timing. It's going to depend on the dog. Honestly, it depends on the command too. Because you don't want to, like if you're teaching sit, you don't want to say sit, sit, sit. Because then what you're actually teaching when the dog finally does it is that the word sit, sit, sit is the command, not that single word sit. Anyway, just occasionally saying wait, wait. The dog's trying to figure out what I want. I know what the dog wants. The dog wants me to open the door so he can come out. The dog's trying to figure out what I want. And the great thing here is that as soon as the dog does what I want, I can reward that by giving him what he wants, which is just me opening the door. So I might say, wait, wait, wait. And as soon as I see a little bit of restraint, he doesn't have to hold this wait for minutes at a time. As soon as I see just a little bit of restraint, I'm going to pick up on that, say yes, open the door and say, okay, as he's coming out through the door, again, that behavior then command thing, as soon as he naturally breaks that wait, as soon as I open the door, so I just say, okay, and let him out. Now, in his mind, I've then associated that okay command with breaking the wait. And all of that was without ever having to physically restrain the dog. Now, again, small steps. We're going to progress from there to the point where I say wait. The dog immediately backs away from the door, sits, and waits. I can swing the door all the way open, which again is something you do in small stages, going from just a little bit open and then closed again, a little further open, to just being able to open the door and the dog is still holding that weight. And then you say, okay, and the dog comes out. And eventually you get to the point where the dog just builds the habit of, oh, I know that every time that I get out of my kennel, I do a wait first and then I get to come out. So you'll eventually get to the point where if you walk up to the kennel, the dog's reaction is going to be to back off and patiently wait, which is just like great dog behavior. But that's also not going to happen on its own. You have to train the wait command and then increase the length of time that you're expecting on that wait command gradually over time. And actually, it seems gradual, but you look back on it and you're like, actually, that didn't take that long for the dog to catch on. And now he's doing really well at this. Now, the next thing we're going to do is, and even like as we're working on that weight in the kennel, we're going to start applying weight to other situations to get the dog to generalize that weight command. So we're also going to use the weight command every time that we go in and out of the front door of the house, or any door for that matter. So how do we do that? Well, the dog wants to go outside, and I should reiterate here, remember that one lesson at a time thing. So if you're still working on house training and the dog has done a really good job of holding it and is going to go outside, don't make them stop and wait for very long at the door or at all for that matter. Just be happy with getting them outside so that they make the choice to relieve themselves outside. Don't do too many lessons at a time because you'll end up with just multiple failures instead of at least one success. Anyway, back to the wait at the door. The dog wants to go outside, but I'm going to have the dog wait. And again, we're going to do this in small steps, right? I have the door closed, completely closed, so the dog can't go outside. and I'm not going to open the door until the dog shows at least some restraint. So maybe that's taking a couple steps back, maybe it's stepping back and sitting, and then we progress from there through these same small increments to the point where I can actually swing the door open, and the dog's default is to walk up to the door and wait. Even if I haven't given the okay command to go through the door, the dog knows, just out of habit, oh, before we go in or out through the door, I wait, and I wait for Isaac to say okay, and then I go through. Same thing with something like giving the dog a bowl of water. Now, so maybe you have your water bowl and you fill it up at the sink and the dog's thirsty because you've just been out on a walk. So the dog's excited to get a big drink of water and you have to get from holding the water bowl where you walked from the sink and you're holding it to setting it on the ground without the dog spilling it. This is where that wait command gets to be really useful because once they know that command and you can apply it to getting their water also, you can just say wait, have the dog back off, give you some space where you can just set that water bowl on the floor without the dog jumping on it and spilling it and knocking it out of your hands and making a big mess. Same thing goes for food. Every single meal, which if we're doing 3 meals a day, this gives you 3 opportunities every day to train wait on food. Same thing here, fill up the food bowl, give the dog a wait, give them the food, and again, you're going to start with making it really easy where the dog actually can't get to the food. Maybe that's because you're standing holding it and you say, wait, just wait for the dog to show a little restraint. As soon as they do, you say, okay, and set it down in front of them. So that's like stage one again. And then just take those small steps to the point where you can give them the food and they just stare at you waiting for the okay because they assume that getting their food also means wait. Now they're building this habit also builds a couple of other really good habits. One of those is not building the reinforcing the behavior, building the habit, whatever, of thinking it's okay to just charge in and get food, building the habit of showing restraint around food instead of charging in and getting it. So that's one positive from this. Another one is actually when it comes to what's sometimes called food aggression or resource guarding in dogs. Now, again, this is a natural dog behavior. You think about like all sorts of wild dogs living out in the wild and they have some food. Well, they're naturally going to want to protect that food from another dog or another animal for that matter coming in and taking it. So food aggression is really think of it as resource protection. And that's just a natural dog behavior, but we expect something different. So building the habit of being in this wait command before they're allowed access to their food really does help with that. Another few pointers, if that's something that you're struggling with your dog, or you see that behavior developing in a puppy, because this is extremely common. Lots of people deal with this. And if you're lucky enough to be training a puppy from scratch, where you're basically starting with a clean slate, that makes it really easy. If you're dealing with an adult dog that already has food aggression issues, you might actually want to get some professional help with that. But with a puppy, it's actually pretty easy. So the wait command is part of it. And then also, as the puppy's eating, put your hand in their bowl and even cover their food and so that they can't get it. And then immediately let them have it again. And then pick up a few pieces in your hand and turn your hand over so that they're eating out of your hand in their bowl. And then mix their food around with your hand in their bowl. And they're going to rapidly become totally okay with that and not have those food aggression or resource guarding issues later on. And actually, along those same lines, as much effort as it may seem when you're training a puppy, just remind yourself that it's 100 times easier to do the training and deal with the behavior and all of that when you're working with that clean slate puppy than it is going to be to correct a behavior later on that you failed to deal with your puppy. Okay, so I think we pretty thoroughly covered that wait command. And like I said, you're going to generalize wait to a whole lot of things. And I'm just trying to think of some other examples. I've even used wait with them now for like putting their leashes on because, you know, we're going for a walk or whatever, and they're all excited, so they're just naturally wiggling around and moving, and I want to get their leash clipped to their collar, so I just say, wait, and they hold still until I'm like, okay, so say, wait, they hold still, I clip the leash on the collar, and then I say, okay, and then they get all excited and wiggly again, because they're puppies, it's what they do, but this wait command has just been super, super useful for all sorts of stuff, even like loading up in the car, getting out of the car. I mentioned coming inside, going outside, in and out of their kennels, food, water, you name it. In my mind, very valuable command that you're going to end up using a whole lot. Stay, on the other hand. Now, we briefly talked about stay, how I'm either going to put the dog in a sit or a down, and then tell the dog to stay. What I'm expecting here is that the dog holds that position until I tell them to come. Because for me, that's just what I want the dog to do to end a stay, is to come to me. Now, I know some people use another command to basically just release the dog from a stay and the dog is free to go do whatever it wants. I would actually prefer that the dog come to me, partly just out of habit after a stay, and partly so that I can physically reward the dog. I can rub his ears and scratch his head and pet him and give him a treat for doing a good job in the stay, and then also for properly executing come. So that's going to reinforce both of those commands, actually. Now, stay can be a little tricky to train, and that's just because inherently you're not necessarily right there when the dog is executing it, and there's not a moment. I guess maybe the reason why it's a little trickier to train is the other commands, there is a defined moment when the dog does the command, like sit or down or come or up or whatever it is, or look at me. There's a moment when the dog does that. With stay, there's not an exact moment where the dog does a good stay. There's really only an exact moment when they fail to do it, when they stop staying. Lucky for us, though, dogs are pretty smart, so they figure it out pretty quickly. And the way that I train this is, like I said, put them in either a sit or a down, and you start out in that small training bubble, and then once they're in that, you need to calm yourself down, slow yourself down, because the dog is going to mirror kind of your mood a little bit. Say, stay. And the easiest way, and dogs tend to get this really quickly, just put your hand out like a stop, kind of in the dog's, not right in the dog's face, but palm out toward the dog, stay. And that lower, slower voice, and that's going to help the dog calm down, settle a little bit. And then initially, if the dog just does that for 1 or 2 seconds, and then you're able to say, come, and the dog comes to you, and then you give them all the reward, all the affirmation, then you're just, all you're going to do is slowly build on that. You know, first it's 1 or 2 seconds with you right there with the dog. And then it's 1 or 2 seconds with you literally one step away. And then maybe it's 3 or 4 seconds with you 1 or 2 steps away. And you're just slowly, slowly, slowly going to incrementally build the amount of time that you're asking the dog to stay and the distance you are from the dog. Now, the other thing that's fun to add to this, and actually really good to add to this, is intentional distraction. Now, like I said, when you're initially training this, calm yourself down, that little lower pitched voice, slower, stay. And that just communicates to the dog kind of the mood that they're going to be in. Now, once they get it, once they know what that means, and they're performing that pretty well, and you can walk a little ways away and they're in a solid stay, then start doing crazy stuff. Spin, jump, all of that, act a little crazy, because that's going to make the dog want to come to you, but don't actually say come. So start slow, maybe with just like a slow turn, and then maybe a couple spins, and then gradually add to it where you can like do all sorts of crazy stuff and add other distractions too, and throwing balls and swinging ropes around, whatever it is. And you have the dog in a stay and they're in a solid stay, and you just incrementally add to the time, the distance, and the number of distractions. And that's how you teach a dog a solid stay. Next one is going to be leave it. And we're going to start this with leaving a treat and where they actually get the treat at the end of leave it. And then we're going to start generalizing it to other stuff too. Socks, fence lines, bears, whatever. But the way that we're going to start, we actually already have taught Ajax and Aura leave it, and they're doing really well with the leave it command and with generalizing it to all of the other stuff that they're supposed to leave. Anyway, the way that we do this is with a treat again. We're going to put the treat on the ground in front of the dog and cover it with our hand. So cup your hand, palm down over the treat, get the dog's attention. If you can get a look at me at this point, that's really good. If you can't, don't push it. Maybe remove a little of the temptation and then see if you can get a look at me. Anyway, you're going to say leave it, and then you're going to slowly move your hand to reveal the treat. Now, the dog might immediately go for it, especially if they haven't been taught this leave it command at all before. All you're going to do is zoop, slide your hand back over the treat to physically cover it so that the dog can't get it. Now, the dog knows that that treat is under there, and they're probably going to nose around at your hand for a little while, trying to figure out what you want them to do to get that treat. Now, as soon as the dog shows a little bit of restraint, kind of like with that wait command, as soon as they show just a little bit of restraint, you're going to reward them with the treat. Say, yes, here you go. Good dog, all of that stuff. And then do it again. And again, eventually, incrementally, you're just going to build that to the point where, like right now, I could take a slice of roast beef or ham or something and actually throw it on the floor right in front of the dog, simultaneously saying, leave it, and it will just land right between their paws and they won't touch it. So you're going to have to work up to that point. But again, just like the success that I've had so far with teaching the leave it command, if you just incrementally, every time you train leave it, you make it a little more difficult for them. By more difficult, I mean more difficult for them to leave it. So maybe it's a higher value item, like that roast beef instead of a dry old doggy biscuit or whatever. Or it's closer to them, so it would be easier to just reach out and get it. They wouldn't have to move. Or you're actually further away, so there's less of that disincentive where you might not be physically able to get back to cover it. But again, set the dog up for success. Don't put them in that position to fail where you wouldn't be able to intervene until you're confident that they actually will do it. So again, just like with all of these others, you're going to incrementally work up to longer time period and all of that. So if you and your dog can master that list of commands, so what do we have? Look at me, come, sit, down, up, stand, wait, stay, and leave it. You're going to be well on your way to having an awesome dog. So in the next installment of this series that we're doing on dog training, we're going to take it up a notch, and we're going to talk about some of the more advanced skills that are not just the basic obedience commands. So that's going to be some of the polite greetings to guests. We're already working on that, but you'll get more updates on how we're able to progress with that. Walking on leash, walking off leash, healing both on and off leash, and maybe some fun tricks too. Oh, actually one fun trick, because we are starting to teach them a few tricks because it's fun and they're more than capable of learning all of this stuff. So we want to keep them engaged. So the play dead trick is a fun one. And again, you just use lure training for that. From a down, you're going to take that lure, put it in front of their nose, and just make a fairly tight circle around over their back. So as they follow it with their nose, they just naturally kind of fall over on their back. And at that point, same as all this other stuff, you just say play dead, give them the treat, and affirm and reward them. And it's not going to take long before they know that one. We're also teaching them crawl. And this one's really fun and actually really easy to teach. All you do is from a down position, you're going to put that treat in front of their nose and then pull it horizontally along the floor without lifting it up. Slowly enough that they follow it with the nose, stretch that neck out, And eventually it's going to get far enough away that they're going to do a little shuffle, hopefully staying in that down position. Now, if they go back into an up to follow it, it's okay. Don't give them that positive affirmation. Just start over again. Now, as soon as they actually do a shuffle, like a crawling shuffle, a little army crawl, staying in that down position, even just like one step like that, that's when you affirm them. You give them that yes, click, treat, crawl, all of that. And eventually you'll actually get them to the point, and we have with our dogs, where you can give them a crawl command from a down and they'll just start doing a little army crawl across the floor. It's pretty fun. So all sorts of tricks you can teach your dogs, and useful stuff too. But that's kind of where we're going to be next time, is with some of those, I'd call them more advanced skills beyond just the basic obedience commands. Like I said, if you can master these basic obedience commands that we talked about on this episode, you're going to be well on your way to having an awesome family dog. Hope you're enjoying this series. A quick reminder, those books we talked about, Zach George's Dog Training Revolution, Zach George's Guide to a Well-Behaved Dog, and that's all I have for this week. So until next time, just remember that a well-trained dog is an enjoyable dog to be around. So train your dogs and pursue your mastercraft. Bye. Theme music for the Master of None podcast is Club Seamus by Kevin MacLeod. Incompetech.com. Licensed under Creative Commons by Attribution 3.0. CreativeCommons.org. If you need some of your own original music, go check out Kevin's other work at his website, Incompetech.com.